Okay, beautiful soul. So I wanted to really just get into the details of all the conversations that I had with my family. So this is kind of going to be a little bit of a ramble of thoughts of what I was able to gather and some of the dialogue and the interchange between myself and my sister together with my parents, which was episode 2 that you heard, the conversations that I had with my sister, which were just between the two of us, just a reflection about all the different ways in which we were able to, you know, disrupt some of the cycles that we have and the ways we've done it together. And then the conversation that we had with my nephew, Aiden. So I'll start us off with some reflections of the conversation with my parents. I love that my parents are so incredibly willing now to have conversations about breaking cycles. But I want to preface what I'm about to say and everything that I'm about to say about the conversation that we had with the fact that this didn't happen overnight. I know that very often what we want is for there to be really expedient change in our families and especially in the older generations. And in part, that leads us into very forceful interactions that almost always lead to finger pointing and conversations that aren't productive. And I'm telling you this not just from the perspective of having had those conversations that are not productive with my family members, particularly with my parents, but also seeing some of my clients have unproductive conversations with their family members that have led them into darker places with those family members and or have actually disrupted the relationship itself. And if you have relationships that you wish to maintain and you don't want the relationships to, in essence, be disconnected, right? Like if your desire is not to go no contact, if your desire is to form whatever version of a healthy relationship it is that you can with your family members, then I would actually urge you to move in the direction of more gentle conversations. And there are ways that we can do that. In part, in the book, I actually explain different ways in which we can organize ourselves emotionally in our nervous system in order to be able to have those conversations. And it takes some time to get there. So the first interchange that you're going to have with the people that you wish to have a conversation with, it's probably going to feel even mildly overwhelming, I would say, because you're going to have a lot of those emotions that are wanting to come out. So it's always going to be a really good rule of thumb to work on how you can settle your nervous system so that you can have the most productive conversation that you possibly could have. And I will tell you from personal experience that in the moments when I was actually yelling and having those more forceful conversations, what ended up happening for me is that I actually felt an immense, and I'm telling you, immense, almost intolerable amount of both guilt and shame. And I've seen that happen also in numerous, countless clients that I've worked with. Whenever we kind of like feed that shame cycle, it makes it so that the conversations become harder thereafter. So I don't want that for you. What I want is for us to have the conversations that can lead to productive dialogue that can actually layer on top of each other and create what I call like an upward spiral of health-promoting conversations and healthy conversations. Now, in the dialogue with my parents, as you can see, my father became really tender, really acknowledging some of the traumas and the ways that he has been continuously internalizing those traumas that we've had as a family unit. And in part, I'm really proud of my father and my mother for being willing to tap into that tender part of themselves and talk about those longstanding wounds. And when I say longstanding, we're talking 1995 or something. Actually, 1991, really, when we first migrated here. So It's 30 plus years of a wound that has been there and just festering and for a very long time not spoken about, because it just felt like, well, we have each other now, so why even like touch it, right? Like there's no point of going back to the pain. But as you can see, it remains, and it takes time to really get to a place where you can talk about the wound and not really have it overcome you. And even though, you know, for my parents, they tend to hold pretty balanced perspectives on a lot of things now. You know, those wounds, they can still hurt. And that is something that we know very much in reference to like inner child wounds, how they, for the most part, they tend to stay with us well into our adult lives. And as you can see, you know, from my father's recollection of poverty and not being able to afford certain toys and gifts, it left a really deep impression in him. And I always say that poverty is traumatic, and it creates really deep wounds that most people don't acknowledge, because they believe that's just the status quo of just being a person who's poor. But in reality, there comes a time when the adult acknowledges the deficit that the child had, or that they had as a child. And that in and of itself, that understanding of, wow, I could have had better had I not been in poverty, or I could have had at least something in my parents' lives. They barely had anything. They come from very deep poverty. And so to see that they're able to see, wow, like there was so much missing, so many resources lacking in our childhood, and almost like feel tender about it, is something that, although I know it brings up a lot of tough emotions in them, I like to allow them to have those emotions, because I rather them pour them out and express them than keep them. And so I'm really proud of them for being willing to do that, being willing to do it publicly. And like my mother said to me, even before I wrote Break the Cycle, the book, she said, if this is a tool that you're going to utilize to help others heal, it is an honor for me to have our stories reflected within the book and to have our stories reflected in conversation. And so I know that they take a lot of pride in sharing their story, and I'm really proud of us for being able to do that. Now, one part of the podcast episode that actually didn't make it into the cut was this really funny moment that we had where my mother was actually talking about a doll that she didn't get a chance to have when she was a little girl. And it's so interesting because my mother has always had this huge collection of dolls. It used to be these faceless dolls that are very Dominican. And if you're Dominican, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But there's these like, you know, dolls that are dressed in these like almost kind of Victorian dresses. And they're, you know, just a very like ornamental, like Dominican doll that a lot of people have in their homes. But my mom would collect so many of these, and she started collecting dolls from different places that we would also travel to once we started traveling to other places in the world. And I always found it to be mildly irritating, because it felt like she was just kind of holding on to like stuff and clutter. And I never really knew the backstory behind it until we recorded, which was, you know, this didn't make it into the episode, I will say also, because we recorded her on our phone when she was saying it. But she basically told the story of like when it was Three Kings Day, and Día de los Reyes in Spanish, and she was actually wanting a doll for Los Reyes. And, you know, she went to her godmother's house to go collect her Reyes, and her godmother said that one of the camel's legs broke, and as a result, they never made it to her home to bring her doll for the Reyes, and my mother was devastated, and she didn't, you know, she just, it felt like it just left a mark in her heart that she never got her Reyes. In reality, you know, what was happening was that they were too poor to afford any gifts for the kids, and so she didn't get a gift. And so when she was old enough to actually afford her own dolls, she would just buy herself dolls. And I never knew that that was a way in which my mother was, in essence, reparenting herself and giving herself what she didn't get as a child. And so I, you know, I really treasure that for her. I almost want to buy her a bunch of dolls now, you know, just to, like, see her in her joyous state. And, it, you know, sometimes when we can just sit back and listen to the stories that our parents and our grandparents hold within them, we can understand their day-to-day behaviors a lot better. I wasn't understanding that all these annoying dolls that my mother's always had everywhere were a part of how she was reparenting herself. Had I lended a listening ear maybe earlier in my life, it would have been an opportunity for me to say, wow, that's something that is bringing healing to my mother. Let's do more of that. And I've done that with other things, but this is just an example of how really this process continues. And I'm so grateful that I get an opportunity to even have that reflection now, right? But that's just something that I thought really stuck out for me, and that is also a learning moment for me in this episode that I'm hoping to share with all of you, just to see, for all of us to see, you know, the ways in which this cycle-breaking journey just has so many different legs to it, and we can continue learning and we can continue building the insight. Now, in the episode, I also talked about ways in which my father was present. Even though he wasn't physically present for all of those years, he was present for us in spirit, right? Like, he sent us letters. Within those letters, he would send us actual photos of him so that we can see his evolution throughout the years. And to give you context, my father was here. So we migrated to the U.S. in 91. My father came in 93 for 2 years, and then he went back to the Dominican Republic to await his residency for another 10. So I basically, from ages 5 until age 21, with the exception of those 2 years when he was present in the U.S., I didn't have my dad around, only when we went to visit him in the Dominican Republic. And that was once a year, which was what we could afford. And so in between, he would send us these letters, and we also had calling cards back then where you would pay $5 for a calling card and you would get about 2 minutes of talking time. $5 was a lot for us back then, so we didn't really talk to him very much, but we did get these letters, which were really beautiful. And I like to share a snippet of the letters, which I didn't really get a chance to read during the episode, but I think that these letters really reflect what he was able to give us in this time, which was really beautiful, and I feel like we still hold on to the spirit of these letters in our family. He says, "En cuanto a las niñas, quiero que las tres, tú y ellas, las que se mantengan bien unidas y llenas de amor, porque es lo que siempre nos hará felices a todos." And so in translation, he's saying, in reference to you and the girls, I would like for all of you to maintain a unity among you, and that you are always filled with love, because that is what will always keep us united and happy. And it was those nuggets of wisdom, of strength, of love that he passed on, you know, through these letters. I only have one of the letters that I was able to actually find and keep in all of our belongings. But this letter means so much to me because it is a reflection of that time. And I needed to read my father's words in his handwriting and see the date that, which was October 9th, 1997, when he wrote this to us, and see how much he wanted to remain present in our lives and how much he wanted to have us feel his love, because that really did act as a major glue that kept us together. And even when he finally came to the U.S., that very love was still very much present. So these were some of the nuggets that I, in essence, gathered from that episode. But then beyond that episode, we transitioned into the conversation that I had with my sister Lady. And with her, you know, Lady always provides me with so much wisdom. I feel like she's just like this old soul and this person that is very abundant in her thinking about how we break the cycles. But in reality, I think some of that does come from the enormous responsibility that she has had as the first daughter of immigrants and the one to really carry our family line. One thing that she doesn't, you know, she's very humble, so she doesn't really kind of like mention this, is that she did a lot of self-sacrificing. And some of that self-sacrificing looked like her going to a local college so that I could go away for college and I could actually have the full college experience. Some of that was also her working really early on in life so that she could help my mother, who was, in essence, operating as a single mother at that point in time, so that she could help her to actually pay the bills. Some of it also looked like her getting our first family car and we actually being able to drive around for the first time, whereas we caught buses for at least 15 of the years that we were living in Newark, New Jersey. And I remember one incident where my mother felt so much despair around catching a bus because she, like she mentioned, she actually waited for the bus for an hour. And when the bus finally arrived, and it was like, there was a snowstorm, and so she was like out there in the cold with like snow up to her knees, and the bus actually drove past her, and so she had to actually wait another hour for the next bus, and she was freezing. And at that point in time, my mother wasn't really aware of how to properly cover her body and the proper coats to wear because we were so new in this nation. And so, you know, she felt so disoriented, and so she had like this very out of body experience where she's like, my goodness, like it's freezing. What am I doing here? And that really, really remained like marked in her memory. And I think a part of my sister even getting a vehicle was to really kind of help us to not feel those burdens anymore. The burdens of like having to wait for a bus and not being able to have transport that can, you know, that could have been more expedient and could have saved us from the cold. So there were so many moments of self-sacrificing in order to make sure that we had a better life that my sister initiated and ignited and continued. And it is in part why I dedicate Break the Cycle to her. It is in part why I devote a lot of my life and energy and work to my sister, because very often, eldest daughters of immigrants don't get to feel that love and appreciation. And I think for anyone who's out there who is the eldest daughter or the eldest sibling, I just want you to feel seen and feel loved and feel like you have done something that your family treasures and appreciates you for. And I equally would want to apologize to you on behalf of society for placing that added burden on you and potentially contributing to your lost childhood, because that matters too. It matters for you to be seen in by way of an apology as well. So I wanted to offer my sister that opportunity in a very tangible way. And you probably couldn't really hear it in her voice or see it in her eyes, but she was getting teary-eyed in that moment. And I think a part of her getting teary-eyed is her feeling that appreciation, and I want her to feel that joy. It's almost like joy is tears, and it is what I desire for her to feel in our generation. I don't want to be an old lady telling her, you know, when we're 80 years old, that what she did back then was wonderful and appreciated. I want her to feel that appreciation now. So you probably gathered a lot more from that episode, but that I feel like was what was most central in my heart. And then finally, the episode that got me most nervous out of every episode that I've ever held in this entire podcast was that with my nephew, mostly because I just wanted him to feel comfortable, which he obviously did. But also, you know, I wanted to be playful with him, which I have been since literally day one of his life. I have always been that source of joy, I believe, among all of us. But I've always been really silly, playful with him. And in part is because I learned very early on through my sister that joy was something that she wanted to instill in her child's life. And so I've always been very intentional about bringing that element in, which is why we get really playful around like some of the songs and things that he used to say when he was little. But what I think is something that I hold most closely to my heart is the ways in which my sister is able to talk about her son and the ways that he's able to talk about his mother. There's a mutuality in their love. There is a way in which I believe both of them have a strong bond, and there is a real appreciation that my nephew has for his mother and for everybody in the family that I think is incredibly beautiful. And when I say, you know, did I mess you up or did I screw you up, it's super playful, and I know that he gets that I'm playing with him, but I really appreciate his words and his sentiments, because sometimes the adults in the life of a child do want to hear what impact they're having, and if they're not having the impact that they desire, it's important for us to listen to that as well and to make adjustments. And I've had to make adjustments because of what my sister has told me about how I've showed up to the life of my nephew. And I've had to really kind of humbly take that in. And I've also heard from my nephew, like I mentioned in the episode, like he's said to me certain words that have made me take a step back and have really humbled me around how I approach him, believing that I'm superior to him because I'm older versus like really learning from him as to how he desires to be treated and learning how he is evolving as a human. All of that I learned from my sister because I'm not his parent. I'm simply the aunt. And I'm just someone who has influence over his life. But because I do, I must be very intentional. And so, but I just love how his personality shows and how just bright he is and how emotionally intelligent he is, and the playfulness around, you know, me being self-referential, like that's something that's a bit of an inside joke in our family, which you probably wouldn't catch, but it's something that, you know, we always bring that element of humor that my sister said in the second episode that my father has inculcated in us. We bring that into a lot of our interactions as a family, and I think it really shows, and it showed in this podcast. My hope with bringing my family in was twofold. It was for me to help you to see that we all have something that we're working on, that there are different generations that have done whatever they could. Some parents have done more than others, and that, like my sister said, we each do our part and we allow the next generation to do theirs. And we have to exist in that reality that we can't do it all in one generation. So when we're talking about breaking cycles, we're not talking about everything being perfect thereafter. We're just talking about doing whatever we can to set up the next generation for a better future than what we had. And that's the best that we can do. So I hope that that offers you really an eye into how we have been able to do it. And remember that it is only one family and one way in which we've been able to internalize these very practices, insights, and acknowledgement of generational trauma into our family. But it isn't the only way. You will gather your own ways of integrating all of the practices and insights into your own, and that's going to be your way, and that's going to be your story. And, you know, welcome that. I hope that this vulnerability that's expressed in this podcast in this season offers you an opportunity to feel like you can be vulnerable too, because this work is vulnerable work, and it is there in that vulnerability that we actually engage in the most courageous work that we are likely to do in our lifetime, which is the work of breaking cycles of trauma. And I hope that it has been nourishing to you and to the people around you to be able to listen to this. If you feel like these are conversations that you want other people to listen to, forward it to them and share it with them. I think it can be very therapeutic for families to hear other families having conversations that are very raw and authentic. And I hope that it offers a healing balm to anyone that's listening. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you at the next episode. There you have it. This was a wonderful episode. I hope that you really enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the vulnerability. I hope that you enjoyed the actual lessons and the details within. And if you want to get into your own cycle breaking journey and need the tools for yourself, for your family members, friends, people that you love, then I invite you to buy my book, Break the Cycle, A Guide to Healing Intergenerational Trauma, where you'll be able to guide yourself through the different areas of intergenerational healing and really have a roadmap for the work ahead. I hope that you can hold steady to your heart and that you can feel settled as you navigate these tough terrains of breaking cycles, and just know that the work is worthwhile at the end. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.